It's estimated that 200,000 acres of forest are cleared each day. That's 139 acres each minute. Assuming that there are around 400 trees per acre, that equates to 55,600 trees being destroyed every single minute around the world. Is there anything we, as individuals, can do to arrest this trend? Well, one listener has been in touch to say that she and her brother planted a conker in their garden over 60 years ago, and now a magnificent 25-metre mature chestnut tree takes pride of place in their garden. Audrey McCabe's parents bought the house in Santry in Dublin back in 1950, and Audrey still lives there with her husband. But there's much more to the garden than the chestnut tree. Her parents also planted a number of heritage roses as well as pear, peach and damson trees. But getting back to the chestnut tree, it recently developed bleeding horse chestnut canker, and Audrey went to the National Botanic Gardens for advice, and lo and behold, it worked. It now looks amazing. Our reporter Terry Flanagan headed over to Santry to see the chestnut tree for himself.
Hi Terry, how are you?
How are you?
Very well. Welcome to my garden, and here's my beauty. This is what you've come to see.
This is what I've come to see. It's a fantastic chestnut tree, a horse chestnut tree, and it must be, what, 50, 60, 70 feet tall, is it?
It's nearly 80 feet tall, actually, really? Yes, and it is protected by the environment because it's over 40 feet high. And it's just my pride and joy. It's
now,
a focal
we are here,
point.
We're in a normal garden.
A normal garden here in Santry, just a basic garden. And I just love it because it's very secluded, nice and big, but we've everything in the garden.
Okay, well, let's go up to the tree first, because that's really what I've come to see. God, before I go up to the tree, I see here, you're growing all your own vegetables.
Yes, we like to be self-sufficient, and it just proves that you don't need to have acres, and you don't need to be a farmer, and you don't need to have endless knowledge. You put them in little troughs. I have spinach, I have onions, green beans,
peppers,
bell peppers, tomatoes, potatoes.
Got all of this grown just outside your back door?
Absolutely. It's outside my back door, and what we don't use, we can freeze. You can freeze all your vegetables once you chop them up small.
Okay, so we're going to head now across the lawn. I see an old, what looks like a retaining wall here. How long are you in the house here?
My parents bought this house in 1950 off the plans. 1950. So they've owned the house all that time, so they've reared all the children. And throughout the years, when they're digging up, they used to have a bigger vegetable plot. The whole back end of the garden there was vegetables. And every time they dig, they'd find rubble and they'd build it and build a little wall here.
This is lovely. And I see some of the old plants that look like geraniums or Herb Roberts, I think they are.
Herb Roberts, they are. And they are, I think they must be 40-something years old. I don't move anything. If a plant is happy, it stays.
Great. Okay, come on, we keep moving towards this. I'm distracted all the time. I'm trying to get up to the chestnut tree here. And you've got a decking. We're going to have to walk across the decking here.
Yes.
And now I'm just about standing. I can hear the birds. Yeah, beautiful. Just about standing underneath your chestnut tree.
Yes.
Tell us the story of the chestnut
tree. Okay. When my parents came out here first, all of Santry was woodland. And there used to be Santry Demise, which was the Earl of Santry had his house up in the woods. And you were allowed to go up into the park up there for walks. And my older brothers and sisters and my mum and dad, because there was no buses out here in those days, they would stroll up there. And my eldest brother, Niall, was a devil for picking up conkers, because they used to put the strings through them and kill each other with them.
Don't I remember it well.
And my mother always remembers telling him this day, if there's any arguments over those conkers, they're going out. And he said, no, I'm going to plant a tree that everyone will remember me by.
Really?
And my mum said, if you're planting a conker, plant it down the back end of the garden and watch it every day and it'll grow. And here it is today.
And how long ago is that?
He planted that in 1957.
Wow. So it's 62 years
ago. And it's literally an original chestnut from Santry Woods, which is no longer here with us. They have built all Northwood and Gulliver's shopping area and everything in it. They've only a tiny little bit left to wildlife.
Yeah.
And so we have an original one, and it's a memory of my brother because he has since passed.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I didn't know that.
But it's always...
What was it like growing up every year as kids, and you were looking out and you were seeing this tree getting a little bit bigger each year?
Well, I only remember it as the bigger, bigger one, but the boys and my sister, older sisters and my older nephews and nieces would say, oh, it was great. They used to climb it. And my mother was always terrified they'd fall out of it because the house at the back of us had a greenhouse and they put it directly underneath the tree. But there was never a row, never an argument at all. The family at the back were lovely and they used to love collecting the conkers as well. And then we started getting nests being built in it. So my parents used to always tell the children, don't climb the trees certain times of the year, watch the wildlife. Yeah. And it's just been amazing. I mean, it's just such a delight to wake up even now and see the different colours. I mean, it changes. Every day I see something new. My favourite time is when it's in flower with we call it the big candles.
The candles, that's what we call them too, yeah?
It just looks like a mass of candles on a tree and the perfume is unbelievable.
And the leaves are so spectacular. They're kind of palmate leaf.
Absolutely.
The seven little fingers that are present on it.
I just love the shape of them. And then because I'm a teacher, I use a lot of these. I bring them into school and the children do leaf rubbings. We do try draw them. They count the veins on them. We make clay leaves out of it and everything like that. It's just amazing.
And as I look here on the decking, I can see some of the small conkers still in the cases, the seed casings are falling down. And looking up at the tree, quite a lot of conkers there present now.
Yes. I mean, there's absolutely thousands of conkers. Yeah. I mean, it's a miracle we haven't been hit with a few, especially if we have a windy day. And because it's been so dry, they're falling quite early. But we do get a lot that last. And they are nice big and the colour of them, they're just so glossy. And it's something I just love to have them in my hands and just rubbing the feel of them. I'm quite tactile like that. But they just drop down. We don't move them. We just sweep them. And if they want to grow, they can grow.
Yeah, because I see some of them grown here in the bank.
Yes, absolutely. We don't disturb any of them. Now, if they start getting absolutely too big, we probably will have to move some and transplant them into pots and keep them at smaller trees.
Right. And the tree now, 80 foot tall, as you say, does it block the sunlight coming to the house?
No, not at all. As you can see on the decking, it would cover part of the decking here, but because we have our two storage shed and the bar here.
A bar,
yes. They just...
You've got a bar in the garden?
Yes, we have a bar in the garden.
Let's go and have a look at the bar first. Come on. The decking is huge, isn't it?
It's 52 square metres of decking.
Okay, lead me into the bar.
Okay, here you are. This is our little snug.
So you have a little bar here. I'm going to sit up at the bar.
Yes.
And I can see all the glasses out.
Yes, we
little taps, cans of beer, everything. Unfortunately, I can't have a drink now.
I'm so sorry. You'll have to come back another day, Jerry. We decided that we are not very much at going out into pubs and clubs like that. And we decided that somewhere that we needed for our friends and family and whoever wanted to come with them to have comfort in socialising and have chats about future days, old days, different anecdotes that we all remember when we were growing up. So we decided we'd put a bar in the garden. And my husband lined it and he built the counter and then I just did the painting of the shipwreck.
On the front of it.
I always think that an old pub is like something that the pirates would go into years ago and we were trying to make that effect. So we have the shipwreck on the front of the bar and I have fishing nets and different seaside things hanging
out. And lots of flags on the ceiling.
Flags from around the world, yes. And every country we've been to, we bring a flag back and hang it up on the ceiling.
And it's really quaint here because there are a number of stools and they've got a little bench there and you could fit six or seven people in here comfortably.
That sea chest came from South Africa from my husband.
Because your husband's from South Africa.
He is, yes.
Rolf,
that's right. He's from a little place called Ermelo, which is a farming community in the old Transvaalia. Yes, so he loves the farming and that's why I think this garden is so suitable for him.
Right, okay, let's move out of the bar. Me tempting me now here. Let me have a look at the roses too, because I know that you have some very special roses.
Yes, we have most of our roses in our garden are heritage roses, and that they are roses that are quite impossible to get today.
These are the old roses.
Very, very old roses, and the perfume from them is unbelievable.
Ouch! I got a static.
There's electricity. There is thunder in the air.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, the scent is... It's beautiful. Let's have a go with that one there. Yeah, you don't get that nowadays.
You don't get that one. I think my favourite one is the tea rose.
Okay, let's go down.
Yeah. It's
how many have you in total? You must have about 20 different roses.
We have 21 different types of roses and not one of them have the same perfume. This is my favourite.
That is beautiful.
That's heaven sent. And it's not...
Heaven sent.
It's not cloy, it's not sticky, it's just a nice perfume. And it's lovely to walk up here first thing in the morning or sit out here on the other little table and have a cup of tea, and you can just...
Because most people don't grow this type of rose anymore.
No, you can't. It's impossible, they say, to get them. I've been speaking to the garden centre where I deal with, Mr. Middleton's, and they were saying that they find it so difficult to get heritage roses.
Right.
Yeah, and the Botanic Gardens, they are very interested. So my husband is going to give a few slips in October just to see if we can get
grow them up
there, because there are some that they don't have.
Now, I see over here you have a holly. We can go over and have a look at the holly tree.
We woke up one morning to find a little seedling growing up.
From the ground.
The ground, and this was before my mum had died, and she kept saying to me, now I didn't plant that tree there, and we found out it came from a bird dropping. The berry was in the bird dropping, and it has grown and grown, and people have asked us, why don't you move it? You never move a holly tree. You leave a holly tree where it is, because it grows where it wants, where it feels comfortable and safe, and it brings you very bad luck if you move a holly tree.
And this is a female, because I can see the berries on it, lots of green berries, and there's just one red berry. And holly trees are either male or female, so there must be a male tree somewhere close by. Is it in the garden here?
It's not in my garden. Three doors down, there is another holly tree, and that's where the male holly tree.
You can see this one here is very, very healthy.
Yes, she is. She's actually very healthy, and she can bite.
You certainly can.
She can, yes.
It here.
Even when her leaves fall and you go to pick them up, even when they're withered, they are extremely sharp.
Yeah. And do you have many birds nest in the garden?
Oh, we have a lot. We have a lot of birds here. We have a robin that comes back to us. We presume it's the same one every year, and we leave my husband's tool shed window open because she likes to come in and out, and she makes her nest in different little places in there. Not afraid of us at all. She's actually quite cheeky. She comes up to the windowsill. If I leave the kitchen window open, she has a habit, will hop in. And we watch them constantly. We have yellowhammers.
You have yellowhammers here in Santry?
Yes, we have them. They come to the woodbine tree.
Okay. Woodbine or lanistra or honeysuckle.
Honeysuckle, absolutely.
Beautiful in the evening time, isn't it?
Yes, the perfume. And especially if it rains also, the perfume comes even more. The little yellowhammers love chasing each other up and down the boughs of it.
Yeah. And this plant here, what's this?
This is a Japanese anemone.
Really healthy.
That is a nightmare at times because it takes over. We didn't plant it, yet again, that came in a bird's dropping as well. And they're actually quite expensive to buy, we've been informed. But I love it for its green foliage.
I just think it's lovely. And the flowers are beautiful.
Yeah, the flowers, and they stay for months and months on end. They're really beautiful.
So you garden quite a lot then for wildlife. You don't garden to make the garden look well or for
I want to bring bumblebees, I want to bring red admirals. I have one particular flower up near the deck, in flower pots, the red admirals love it. And I love butterflies, and I feel that we don't do enough in this country to bring wildlife back into our gardens. I mean, you don't need a 20 acre, you just need a small little piece. You can even have plant pots on a balcony to bring just plant flowers like heathers, lavenders, small roses, small flowers, and you'll have bees flying and butterflies fluttering in, and even some birds come and just sit in the roses, the smaller little birds. We have a resident hedgehog as well.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Well, listen, I brought you out a little something. I have it outside the door. I'm going to get it for you, and I'm going to bring it into you. So give me 1 second, and I'm going to just go out, and I'm going to come back into you.
Okay, no problem.
Just have to lift this in. Now, that's
wow.
For you.
Thank you so much. An oak tree. I don't have one.
Well, I've grown that from seed. One of the things I tend to do is I tend to collect, like you, acorns and conkers and that. So that's an oak seedling that's about 4 or 5 years old. And I thought, now that you have a bit of land, maybe you can plant it up.
Absolutely.
Near
that
your
is gorgeous.
Conker tree.
Yes.
That so is let's bring beautiful. It up and see where you might put it or think
yes.
of putting it.
And here is my husband potting up.
Rolf, how are you? Pleased to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
This is a chestnut tree.
Chestnuts which are coming from the conkers of the trees at the back there. It falls and it starts growing, so we pot them up
and give them
away.
Yeah. Well, come on, let's go up and see where you might pot this one then. One thing I notice about your chestnut tree, looks like there's a little bit of infection on the leaves, Audrey.
Yes, a few years ago we got a very bad, it was a European canker came. It was actually a quite a big worry. People might have remembered
hearing
about it.
I do remember that canker disease, yeah.
On the
bleeding canker, is that what it was
Absolutely.
Called?
And we were very worried about ours because we knew it wasn't the season or the time for the leaves to be turning. So we took photographs and I decided we'd go up to the Botanic Gardens, and myself and my husband trudged up and we brought a branch, and we happened to get on the day that the guy, the leading specialist worldwide that dealt with this disease for the chestnuts, was there. Oh. And we showed him, he says, yes, I'm sorry, you've got it because it's airborne.
Right.
There's nothing you can do. But he said, try, cut out everything that's diseased. And if it doesn't work, come back. And he had made arrangements with the Botanic Gardens to give us another small little tree. But my husband climbed and we cut it back very severely. And it worked. And now I think it might be coming back, but I'm not too sure. I'm going to wait till the mid of August to see if it's just the leaves turning. Because
yeah,
these
sometimes,
are...
Sometimes, yeah, but just move over to it there.
These are all the new shoots that have come out over the last 3-4 years, these ones. So they might actually change quicker than the heavier foliage. Sometimes that happens with the chestnut tree.
And as well as that, sometimes when the weather's very, very dry in the summertime, the leaves go off very, very quickly.
They do. And, you know, we water because we're trying to conserve water as well, so we collect water in a lot of things, so we use as much of that as possible. But because the roots are so far down, they can get moisture.
Yeah.
Because as you can see, it's a huge
I'm just
trunk.
Going to the back of it here, because we didn't go down to the very end of the garden, and I can look, God, there's no way you'd get your arms around that.
No, because it goes all, it's kind of split into two chunks here. There's another big one here, mind yourself.
Oh, yeah. I see it here, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, split there.
Yeah.
And this is right behind the shed.
Right behind the shed, the bar.
It is a fantastic
tree. One, two, three parts to it.
Yeah. So I wonder, what would your brother think now if he were to see his tree? What do you think he'd think?
He'd be so proud. I mean, even up to his last few months on this earth, he always talked about his tree. And when he heard that it had got this disease, he was very worried. And then my husband Rolf was able to go in and tell him, I've saved the tree. And you could kind of see the look of relief on his face when he was so ill. And I just kept saying to him, remember, that's your memory.
You must see it in the classroom as well with the kids. I certainly see it, but you're with the primary school.
Yes, I am.
And I know in the primary school you have the nature table, and you can devote a lot of time to nature and wildlife. And I know hundreds of schools around the country used to watch the blue tits in the nest box. And I just feel since then that we're getting away from nature.
We are. We're getting very much away from nature. I try to bring nature in all aspects into my classroom, even when I'm doing English. Like, I mean, Jack and the Beanstalk story. We did the story. We planted the beans. The
Great.
Children grew them. We transplanted them into bigger pots. They were able to bring them home. Some of them live in apartments. They put them on their balconies. They came in and told me, teacher, I had beans for my dinner. So they were amazed by that. There's no reason that you can't bring nature into all aspects of across the curriculum. In maths, you can have them counting conkers, putting them into the different groups, having all varieties, making them into sets. Geography, you find out where in Ireland these seeds come from. Do they come from anywhere else in the world? History, where were they first introduced into the country? Art, draw the seed, then draw the seedling, then goes on to the plant, the flower. There's so much to do. It's so simple to bring nature into a classroom. Subject.
I totally agree. I just wish more and more teachers could do it, but I understand the pressures that they're under.
There is a lot of pressures. Now, don't get me wrong. Some days you kind of go, am I ever going to get through the workload? But that is where I find the enjoyment, because there's no work in it, because you're feeding children's imagination. You're feeding their love. Children love nature if they're given a chance.
Well, no one can say that you're not doing your piece for nature and for wildlife.
Yeah, well, I'm 20 years teaching.
Right.
20 years teaching, and I think it was because I grew up in a time where nature, you went out and you played and the street light was your alarm clock to come home. You never came home and you wandered the fields, and there was no such things as iPhones, iPads or computers.
Different times.
There was computers out as we were growing up, but we never had them because we hadn't enough hours in the day to play and dig holes and make muck pies and take leaves off the hedges and have them as the vegetables in the muck pies. We had great imaginations.
Audrey, it's been an absolute pleasure coming out to your back garden here today. And I suppose finally I should I should just mention your tree, your chestnut tree. I'm sure it gives you lots of pleasure because it's given me lots of pleasure. And I can't wait to take the little ones I've gotten off Rolf and take it home and pot it up myself.
Oh, well, I'm glad that I was able to reciprocate your kindness. Thank you so much for coming out to see my lovely garden. I just call it my little bit of heaven. I mean, when you feel down in the dumps, you just go out and sit on your balcony, sit in your yard, sit in your garden and just listen to nature, because she'll answer you when you're feeling down. She'll cheer you up. Something will come into your garden, be it a fly, butterfly, little bird, or even just a little sound of something. It just warms the heart. Thank you once again, Terry.
What a beautiful story. That was Audrey McCabe speaking with Terry Flanagan about her family's majestic horse chestnut tree. That's all we have time for today. The sound operator is Sheila Neveuil. Our broadcast coordinator is Jarlath Holland. Researcher is John Riley. And the producer is Sheila O'Callaghan. Until next time, goodbye.
The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea and lingered there, so warm and fair, to walk with me. All summer long we sang a song and strolled on golden sand. Two sweethearts and the summer wind.
And Mooney Goes Wild was presented by Derek Mooney.